WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and we're ending this hour with a trip to Louisiana, specifically to a small restaurant called Mosquito Supper Club. It's part of our series that we're calling Summer in Place.
End of the spring, and here she comes back. High, 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 there. Damn. Summer days, oh, summer days.
Yep, we're all heading to Louisiana. The Mosquito Supper Club is a classic double shotgun house in New Orleans' uptown neighborhood, and its food is born of the bayou. Chef Melissa Martin cooks the food that she ate growing up in a small town on the bayou about 70 miles south of New Orleans. The menu changes according to the season and what's available, but some of the dishes include oyster soup and buttermilk biscuits, okra and etouffee, and beignets dipped in cane syrup. And now Melissa Martin has written a cookbook called Mosquito Supper Club. In addition to these beautiful, evocative photos of the bayou and these recipes, including seven different kinds of gumbo, she shares history, traditions, and customs surrounding Cajun cuisine. She also talks a lot about how climate change is affecting the bayou ecosystem and the people who live there as the Louisiana coastal region recedes into the Gulf of Mexico. We are so happy to have Chef Melissa Martin with us. Welcome.
Thank you.
So you grew up in this tiny coastal town, and you describe it really beautifully in the book's introduction. Would you mind reading an excerpt for us?
The introduction starts off, first thing I think about when someone refers to the states below the Mason-Dixon line is that's the north. As a child in one of the southernmost parts of Louisiana, I didn't understand the concept of the American South. To me, everything about Baton Rouge was the north. I grew up with leftover gumbo in the fridge and an oil rig drilling just outside my window. I didn't know it was special to eat cold crabs for breakfast and be surrounded by water and bayous, ibis and pelicans, receding land, and dying cypress trees. I also didn't know I was Cajun. I was born and raised in South Louisiana in Terrebonne Parish. Terrebonne means good earth in French. And situated as it is on Delta soil, the parish is aptly named. The Terrebonne my dad remembers growing up in sounds like a fairy tale land. Cypress and oak lime waterways, squirrels dropping from tree to tree overhead, egrets, cranes, and heroines hiding in hooves of green, blue, and emerald. Now the 100 million migratory birds that use South Louisiana as a wintering habit lack landing pads in Terrebonne Parish. Most of the cypress and oak trees that are still standing are stripped to bare branches, and the majority of the islands of bayous that encompass the bayou waters have become lakes. Terrebonne Parish is hanging on to the coastline for dear life.
So Melissa, what is it that you wanted people to understand about Cajun culture when you set out to make this book?
I wanted to really talk about the subtleties of what is Cajun. I wanted to debunk myths that, you know, Cajun gumbo is synonymous with Cajun, but the roots of gumbo are from all over the world, and the gumbo that I make specifically is from, the Senegali food from Africa that was brought to America by enslaved Africans. And so I really wanted to bring people to this small town, this fishing village, and illustrate the subtleties of Cajun life. Cajun is often described and penned as this, you know, big thing, and it's actually the working people and the subtleties that hold it together and resonates with me as a Cajun woman.
That's in your book. In the intro you wrote, you didn't know you were Cajun. When did you realize you were Cajun?
Not until I think I left South Louisiana. We had a very insular life there. We didn't vacation or go anywhere. We didn't really eat out. We pretty much just lived on the bayou and existed there. And it wasn't until I left and sort of went to college and, you know, people would comment on my accent at the time and then say, oh, you're Cajun. And that's when it really started sitting in. I think when you're immersed in a culture, you really can't see around it. Just like I have friends who live in the Napa Valley take, like, that beautiful landscape for granted.
Mm-hmm. What characteristics, when you think about Cajun culture, what are the characteristics of it?
I mean, for me, and there's lots of different versions of Cajun, that's really important to note. So it's like I can't speak for people on, you know, Prairie Cajuns who are, cook a different style of food and their traditions and cultures are a little bit different from what I grew up with. I grew up in a tiny fishing village. So our traditions and cultures were anchored to the seafood industry, and everyone in my family was a fisherman. So the fishermen brought in the food, the women cooked food. The seasons were sort of dictated by the seafood seasons. When you celebrated oysters was an oyster season, and you made these dishes with oysters. Whereas, you know, if I'm making an oyster dish in April or May, my mom is like, oh God, it's not oyster season. What are you doing? And we've come a long way with technology. You know, we have these bottom oysters and we have like mass refrigeration. So, you know, we have a longer oyster season now in Louisiana. But for me, that's what it is, how I saw it, like growing up sort of barefoot on seafood docks and watching fishermen bring in catch and then watching the women in my life process the seafood and then seeing what they did with the seafood and putting the seafood away. And that hasn't changed, so that still happens every year, you know, same times of year. And for me, that's sort of what resonates the most.
My guest is Melissa Martin. The name of her new cookbook is Mosquito Supper Club. When did you decide you were going to be a cook, that this was going to be your life's work?
I started cooking before Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans. I started working at the farmer's market, and then sort of to challenge myself, I would try to make things with 100% from the farmer's market, probably in a crazier way than most people. And then I started cooking part-time. And then, and at that time I was very young, I was in my 20s, so I had like four jobs all the time. And after the storm came and I lost my job at Loyola University, I was like, I need to do something with my hands and I need to do something where I'm always going to have a job. And I started cooking full-time after that. And I sort of tapped into this production mentality that I learned from the women that I grew up with. And I started cooking first for groups that were helping rebuild homes after Katrina.
So when you say the production mentality of the women you grew up around, what does that mean?
You know, like 500 pounds of shrimp coming in and us all headlessing them and then freezing them, you know. So in the same way that you would, you know, break down cases of stuff in a restaurant, being able to, you know, cook for a large group of people and knowing how to do it, how they just naturally did it like, you know, like they were trained professionally.
So when you decided to start your own restaurant, how did the idea for it come about? What did you want its sort of ethos, what is its guiding principle to be?
So I can say when I started the restaurant, we wanted to take sort of the restaurant model and throw it against the wall and then take the parts that we love about restaurants and then dismantle the parts about restaurants that we didn't love. So pay equality. So the folks in the back house get paid as much as the folks in the front of the house. And we did that by dismantling sort of like the tipping system. We have a service charge. In order to come to the restaurant, you pay the service charge, and then we can pay everyone sort of equally. I wanted to be able, the table to be a conversation between strangers. I wanted to be able to put this food that I grew up with that has its own story from these farmers and fishermen that I know by name. I know their faces. I know their families. I wanted to be able to sort of push that food on the table, and then I wanted strangers to be able to talk about whatever's going on in the world or their life. And mostly when strangers sit at a table, they leave friends. They'll leave after and, you know, go have drinks together. And I wanted people to have the feeling of a slow meal. I wanted to be able to bring people sort of down the bayou to this experience that I grew up with, but not having to go down the bayou.
My guest is Melissa Martin. We're talking about her new cookbook, Mosquito Supper Club. Let's talk about some of the key flavors and ingredients in Cajun cooking. If I want to start to really get involved with this and get involved with your book, what essentials do I need to have on hand before I start?
So you don't need a lot, which is surprising. So I cook everything with onions, bell peppers, and celery, which is the Trinity. Every once in a while, I threw some garlic in, which my grandmother learned about garlic from some Sicilian ladies in New Orleans on a trip once, and then she started implementing it into her cooking. The seasonings I use, everyone's always like, oh, did you use Cajun spice? The seasonings are salt, pepper, cayenne, hot sauce, and bay leaves, and then seafood. So those are, it's really basic. And then if you're cooking beans, you know, it's just basically salt, pork, and beans.
So I do have to say, in the beginning of the book, you list that you have in your larder cane sugar, cane vinegar, cane syrup.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about the role of sugar cane and what difference does it make in the taste?
Yeah, I mean, obviously sugar is Louisiana's most successful crop ever, and not that it comes to us and becomes a good crop from good nature, because it doesn't, but it is here to stay and has been here. And we love using raw cane sugar. We're very, fortunate to be able to get it raw in its raw state and be able to get raw cane juice and be able to get this really beautiful cane syrup. I like bitter flavors, and cane syrup has a bitter flavor that works well in a dressing, a salad dressing, or works well to add to cookies or, many different applications. And the same thing with the sugar. When it's not refined, it really has an earthy, a little bit bitter taste with the sweet, and I love it to layer flavors. I don't use like white sugar at all anymore. I'm kind of addicted to the raw stuff now.
The other thing that comes up so much is shrimp. The first recipes in your book are for shrimp. It's boiled shrimp, fried soft shell shrimp, shrimp poor boy, shrimp stew, shrimp jambalaya. Would you be offended if I played the Forrest Gump clip about shrimp? Because that's the first thing I thought.
No.
Let's
fine.
Do it just because it's fun.
Anyway, like I was saying, shrimp is the fruit of the sea. You can barbecue it, boil it, broil it, bake it, saute it. There's shrimp kebabs, shrimp creole, shrimp gumbo, pan fried, deep fried, stir fried. There's pineapple shrimp, lemon shrimp, coconut shrimp, pepper shrimp, shrimp soup, shrimp stew, shrimp salad, shrimp and potatoes, shrimp burger, shrimp sandwich. That's about it.
I love that. And it's like the first chapter of your book. I never thought I could do that much
with
shrimp.
And it's not about it.
I know, and that's not about it, exactly.
And I think when you think about shrimp, you have to, like, consider it, like, for us and on the bayou, it's kind of like when you think about chicken, where, like, all the different things you can do with chicken, it's, like, never ending. And that is the way we use shrimp. Like one of my favorite recipes is Lucian shrimp spaghetti, which is my son. He turns 20 today, and that's what we're going to have for dinner because it's what he wants, you know. So we pretty much never make a spaghetti and meatballs. It's always a shrimp spaghetti. And shrimp's just so versatile, and it has a lot of flavor, especially when you get it from the right source.
So tell me about Lucian shrimp spaghetti. We're actually going to put the recipe on our website. Why do you call it the near perfect meal?
I mean, God, I mean, who doesn't want to eat pasta almost every day? You know, we kind of have to switch it up for our health and other things. But, you know, I'm never unhappy to have a meal of pasta, sort of any pasta. And this spaghetti is just great. The sauce is sweet and subtle. When you put the shrimp in, you have a really great taste of the bayou, of the brackish sweet shrimp. My mom, it's a little bit of sugar to it. It's like real scandalous. but it's just a really great, it's just a really great meal for me. And the sauce is a little bit thin, which we really like. And it's really, really great. And as a kid, I would always put it in white bread and just make a sandwich with it, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that.
You mentioned your mom. You have your mom's chicken gumbo in here. And you said the chicken gumbo is best made with mean, tired, old hen. Why?
Yes. Well, whenever I was growing up, my grandmother and my grandfather passed and when I was in high school. But I remember being with my grandmother on the Martin side, my dad's mom. And she only would make a gumbo with a hen. So she would send us to the store to go and walk and get a chicken, and we had to get a hen. And it's because an older bird, none of the birds that you get in the grocery store have lived for maybe 6 months before they're slaughtered. But if you get an older bird, then you can really simmer the chicken for a really long time, the way you can braise meat, and it's not going to dry out. It takes longer to cook, just like coke oven. If you cook a rooster, it takes a lot longer to cook. And if you, you know, the younger birds, they just don't act in the same way. So because we don't have access to those birds anymore, we sort of have lost this the specific recipe that I remember having growing up. Like, there's a couple of garden and farm places around New Orleans where they will sell retired egg birds, and so you can get a hen. But as far as like going into like a butcher shop or even going into a grocery store, that sort of has fallen out of our food ways.
In the last section of books titled Sweets and Bread, you have recipes for beignets, strawberry pie, and Pop Rogue ice cream. What is the story behind
Pop Rouge
ice cream? Thank you.
Yeah, so rouge just means red in French. So Pop Rouge is just red pop. And this was a soda that we grew up having. It was called Pop Rouge. And this is an ice cream that we made at the church fair. My family had an ice cream stand. And I'm actually making this ice cream this week. My restaurant is opening up this weekend for the first time since March 14th. And I'm going to spin this ice cream. It's a really fun ice cream. You know, it has a soda pop taste. It's like soft serve. And, you know, it's really great paired with those blackberry dumplings. So that's what we're going to serve this weekend.
And before I let you go, just so we, you know, end a little bit on a serious note, you know, you wrote a lot about how Bayou communities have been devastated by rising sea levels and disintegrating wetlands. What do you want people to know about this area, and maybe ways they could help this area, or shop sustainably, or something?
Yeah, I think that what I want people to know, that this problem is not just a problem for Bayou Cajuns, that this problem was created by partially by the oil industry, and that, you know, we are all, you know, sort of patrons of the oil industry in one way or the other. I think we all right now need to take a good look at so many different things going on in the world. And I think that environmentally, people need to understand what is happening to South Louisiana and how it affects the whole country. You know, the Mississippi River is very important to the country. And these barrier islands that are gone, these places that refine our oil and we bring that oil in, we've been relying on oil for a long time. You know, these places have been destroyed, and these were people's lives and these were people's homes. And you know, now whenever we just had a tropical storm this weekend, and it's something that's really insignificant, but little things like this are very significant now in these communities, and these communities with rising sea levels and all the other things that they're contending with, you know, it means that the seafood industry is suffering tremendously. I mean, we have a huge dead zone right now in the Gulf of Mexico, which is, you know, causing a huge problem for fishermen. And why do we have a dead zone? We have a dead zone because of the chemicals that come down the Mississippi River. So, you know, there's so many things you can touch on that we try to talk about in the book. But it's, you know, South Louisiana has been in dire straits environmentally for a very long time.
Is there any one particular organization you think people could read up on, or where people could read up?
The Mississippi River, you know, organizations, Save the Gulf, Barrataria Terrebonne National Estuary Programs. I think that there is so many different places. I always say they need to put it under one big thing because there's so many different organizations, and we kind of need to be in one big umbrella. But well, people can Mississippi people Gulf can, Restoration Network.
People can go to Google.
Yeah.
That's one of the good uses of Google, right? The name of the cookbook is Mosquito Supper Club. Melissa Martin, thank you so much for joining us, and happy birthday to your son.
Oh, thank you so much.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic Drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink. Drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.